Hey, Senator, how are you doing this morning?
Great, Lillian.
So let's talk GOP tax bill. Middle class is such a broad spectrum. We recently spoke to a Virginia Tech economist who says it's inaccurate to say this bill is going to negatively affect, you know, all the middle class. What are your thoughts on that? Do you agree, disagree?
Well, I think that that's technically right. It won't negatively affect all of the middle class. But what the CBO and virtually every Congressional Budget Office and every economic analysis has found is that millions of middle-class people will actually be paying more if this tax bill passes. And it's particularly the case in Virginia because eliminating the deductibility of state and local taxes hits Virginia very, very hard, and there's an awful lot of middle-class people who will see their taxes go up as a result. So the consensus of economists, including nonpartisan groups like the Congressional Budget Office, is the benefits in this bill are overwhelmingly to the wealthiest and big corporations. Millions of middle-class families will pay more. The working poor will be hit particularly hard. And small businesses are not really given the same advantage in this bill as the large subchapter C corps are. The bill explodes the deficit, and the bill also, if it's passed as in the current form in the Senate, would increase the number of uninsured people in the country by about 13 million. There's been a bad process, and the bill is a bad result. We could make it better if we take the time, but so far the Republicans don't seem willing to do that.
Looks like the Senate wants to completely eliminate deductions for income taxes, whereas the House wanted to keep deductions for property taxes. Why do you think the Senate would want to take all of that out?
There is a general idea in the House and Senate that we want to really limit the deductibility of state and local taxes. That deduction has been part of the tax code since there was an individual tax code. And, you know, the notion is if you're paying state taxes, you should get a deduction against your federal taxes for doing so. I don't think there's a real good reason to do it. What you hear talked about on the Hill, frankly, is, oh, the states that have high taxes tend to be Democratic states anyway, so who cares? So I think there's a lot in this bill that is just done sort of for partisan reasons. Another example is there's an effort to tax graduate students getting PhDs. That produces next to nothing. But when you ask people up here, why are you doing it? It's because, Democrats win the votes of the well-educated generally. So here was a way we could come up with some money by mostly hitting Democrats. This is not a bill that's being done in the way tax reform was done in the past. President Reagan did tax reform in a bipartisan way. It got 97 votes in the Senate. The Republicans have decided in both the House and the Senate they want to do tax reform just with Republican votes. And if they can figure out a way to do it that will punish Democratic jurisdictions or constituencies, they seem to be perfectly willing to do that.
I wanted to jump to the Pocahontas comments that President Trump made. Pocahontas, is a prominent figure in Virginia history. Can you comment on, especially with the tribe members coming forward and saying it's now kind of a slur, what was your reaction to that?
Well, it's outrageous. I have a bill. I'm the co-sponsor of a bill in the Senate to finally give federal recognition to the tribes of Pocahontas, the Powhatan Nation tribes. One tribe that had a land grant from the English has been recognized just in the last year and a half, but there's another six tribes that are connected that we're trying to get recognition for. The Pocahontas story is one of the most powerful stories about the interactions of English settlers and American Indians, and Pocahontas is a revered figure, not just in Virginia and America, but in England as well. And the fact that the president keeps using Pocahontas as kind of a political punchline or joke or slur just shows how out of touch he is with our history and with people's sensitivities and deep affection for this person of real historical importance.
And I know you've suggested a monument of Pocahontas. Do you feel reinvigorated to kind of initiate that discussion again?
This is, every state has two statues in Statuary Hall, and those statues are chosen by the legislature. The legislature made a choice back in the early 1900s to have statues of Washington and Lee, but the law basically allows the legislature to change. In fact, it was even contemplated that the legislature might change the statues over time. And I think a statue of Pocahontas would be an amazing thing to really tell the story of who we are. And that's for the state legislature to decide. But I think we can all agree, especially at this time of year, Thanksgiving, where there's a tradition that you're probably aware of, where the Virginia tribes come to the governor's mansion the day before Thanksgiving every year, mm-hmm. and they present a tribute to the governor, and then the governor throws a party for tribal members to celebrate the peaceful relations between the Virginia tribes and the state government. At this time of year, especially when we're trying to get recognition for these tribes, for the president to continue to go back and use Pocahontas as kind of a punchline just demonstrates a real insensitivity.
Last question I wanted to bring up. So in light of Matt Lauer getting fired from NBC, it was announced this morning. I also saw there's talks of training for the House and staffers to undergo sexual harassment
yes.
training. Does the Senate have anything like that?
It has not been mandatory until recently, but we do it as a mandatory matter in my office. We've done it since I came in 2013. We've had it as mandatory. Just in the last month, after some of these allegations have come forward, the Senate basically passed a resolution requiring staffs to do it, but we've been doing it since I came in, and we're going to continue to do it. And I look, these are tough stories, and it's a challenging time, whether it's Matt Lauer or whether it's Judge Roy Moore or Bill O'Reilly or Roger Ailes or Harvey Weinstein. These are tough stories, but I think we've maybe passed over a cultural Rubicon now where women feel very empowered to speak out against men who abuse them. And in the past, there have been all kinds of intimidation and other reasons where they haven't felt comfortable doing it. And people have to feel free to speak out against abusers. And so as painful as these stories are, maybe we've passed over a cultural change where it's easier to speak out against abuse, and that's going to be a good thing for everybody.
Any comment on Congressman Al Franken retaining his role?
Look, I watched with interest the Franken apology, which was very, very heartfelt the other day. You know, he didn't say the victims were lying, as, for example, Judge Moore or President Trump says. He says, oh, these victims are lying. Al Franken was very direct in his apology. The person who complained about Al Franken, Leanne Tweeden, has accepted his apology, the person who first complained. And I think at this point the voters in Minnesota will decide. But I was very struck by the sincerity and clear emotion in these apologies that he made. And it stood in stark contrast to what you see some others doing when they try to blame the victims or suggest victims are lying.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.